Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick on the show today. The earnings parade continues. We've had Chipotle, Snapchat, Disney, some news that we'll probably lead the show off with. When, of course, we had some bad data this morning out of Biogen. And our two guests today, both very interesting. First off, at 8:15, we are going to be joined by Michael Schmansky. He is with Glenshaw Capital. He's all about VIX and volatility products. So we're going to have him break that down for us. And then at 8:35, we are joined by Eric Irvin with From Reality Shares. They just launched the first blockchain ETF. So we're going to ask him about that. A ticker there is BLCN, and that'll be at 8:35. Joel, tell us how we're doing this morning in the S&Ps.
Oh, all things considered, not too bad. We're trading down 1375 here. Let's call it 14 even at 2680. Ran into problems last night right ahead of Tuesday's high at 99.75. Your high stands at 97.50. So battleground here, just under 2700. Your pre-market low is way down at 2660.50. Really, a not lot in there, folks, as you know, the way the spoos have been whipping around its entire area. But that's a bogey on the downside if we do go into reverse. Mid-range on the day, right here, right now, 2579. That's the level that I'm keeping an eye on early in the session. You have crude in the red here by 31 cents at 63.08. 63, that's been the level, has been the level here going back since the beginning of the year. So holding 63, the rebound continues. Gold in the red by 220. Just no fear in the market. Gold just hanging out, now migrating towards 1300. Silver flat and Bitcoin. Bitcoin is trading up 800. This is the Bitcoin futures here because I got in trouble from Dennis last time when I didn't give the Bitcoin futures. Bitcoin futures trading up 820 at 8,400, trying to find a base at 8,000. Good morning, Dennis. We really missed you yesterday. We're glad you're back today.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm busy flying around with the trading too. I've got 39 positions on right now, just overnight here, and more positions coming at me, it looks like, as well. So it's been a pretty crazy couple of days here for me. I'm not getting any sleep here in the last 48 hours, but we're here for you for a few minutes anyways, trying to trade this open. A lot of action. Start with the win, Spencer, W-Y-N-N. That is the big news, and that is the big mover of the day.
Yep, the news from last night that Steve Wynn is, I guess they took the win out of Wynn. I don't know. That was a really bad. I butchered that joke. Steve Wynn no longer at the helm of Wynn Resorts.
So Wynn Resorts, W-Y-N-N, is trading up almost 10% on this news. We got Edge Seeker in the chat saying this is ridiculous. I agree with them. It's a ridiculous move. It's hard to just come in here just fading. Things get more silly, but if I was long this thing, I'd be ringing the register all day long. I think the move's ridiculous because, okay, just because he steps down doesn't mean that they didn't tarnish the brand. And here you're getting half the losses back in one day. I just don't see this thing coming all the way back and getting to 190-200. We've had a market crash since then to a certain extent. Well, not crash, but a mini crash when we're down 3-4% in a couple of days. I mean, you could argue that WYNN would be at 180 even without the Wynn news, because look at Las Vegas Sands and MGM. They all got killed there too. I think the move's ridiculous. I think it's a gift to the longs. That's my opinion. So I'm not telling you to go out there and short it, but you can tell that I'm bearish on this move. Maybe it continues, but I think when the dust settles here, Wynn is not 179 bucks.
Yeah, the allegations just keep coming out. Man, oh man, that guy, really has some nerve and got away for a long time. Did one have $7.5 million settlement. I'm going to be in the same camp with you, Dennis. Double top here, basis the pre-market trading at 182. Someone has an opinion at 182, and I don't think that it's getting back up there. That fills a gap that you had. So you gap-filled traders. You needed to get back over 178.04. So you can use that as minor support if it starts to go into retreat. But just keep it in. And if, in fact, it did take out that pre-market high and I did have a long position, I'd be out there at the half and whole numbers, man, just trying to find a big seller. Big pop, and you know, people that held on to it. This is the news you've been waiting for, and yeah, this is the pop. So
I think it's a gift, and I think it's still going to have a brand issue here going forward. Is he taking his name off the hotels? Because it's the name that I was concerned about. It's when I gave the argument before about the brand. Sure, okay, maybe he steps down. Maybe people can say, oh well, he isn't stepped down. He still owns probably, you know, a big chunk of this company. And if you're going to go stay at a Wynn, you're giving Steve Wynn money. And there's going to be people that are going to refuse to stay there because of those allegations. So that's my opinion. And okay. I think this pop is a gift. I'll say it again.
Okay. All right.
Vegas Sands, MGM. Some people would say, you know, these pair trade together with Wynn up so much. Is Las Vegas Sands, MGM going to get a lift? I don't think so. This is specific to Wynn. And not only that, when we saw the news come out, we actually saw Las Vegas, when the bad news came out for Wynn, Las Vegas Sands and MGM actually popped on it. So don't be surprised here if Las Vegas Sands and MGM show some weakness here today. I don't know, like you're going to have pairs traders that are maybe going to buy Las Vegas Sands and MGM off this. I don't know if it's a trade though. I wouldn't be surprised if they do see some weakness just because what is good for Wynn in this situation may not be that good for Las Vegas Sands and MGM because they would be the beneficiaries of any business that was going away from Wynn. So I don't think you're going to see the pop in Las Vegas Sands MGM. Full disclosure, I do have a short position on in Las Vegas Sands, so I'm speaking my book a little bit.
Yeah, that's okay. You're allowed to. You probably could speak of your book about 40 positions. So
yeah, 38, 41, actually, Joel. Overnight, these are overnight positions. I have 41 positions on here overnight. So these are basically overnight day trades. Okay. So yeah, you can say I'm a little bit busy with managing 41 positions, but...
All right, Spencer, give us the – there's other news here affecting a stock that's not earnings related. What's going on? It's Biogen, right?
Yep, Biogen missed the primary and secondary efficacy endpoints for in its Action 2 study for natalizumab, the drug.
Really? Not tezolimumab?
Yes. is that how you pronounce it? Sure. They missed both endpoints, Joel. How do they do that?
I don't know. What's the drug for, just out of curiosity? Do you know, or am I throwing you under the bus?
Acute ischemic stroke. So I guess that's for strokes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
I mean, it can't be a very, you know, it can't be one that's very influential here because Biogen is barely down in the pre-market. It's down 0.5%. That's what the market is down. This appears to just be moving off of market action. There wasn't a really big whoosh even. I did see the stock trade down to 327 in the pre-market around 730. So a couple hundred shares traded down there, but they're not taking this to the woodshed on this news at all. This is obviously just not that big of a drug for their pipeline.
See a little bit of a print at 2501, so that's my pre-market low on the same.
2501.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there was like 4,000 shares trading in the bracket, so that's probably a not lot.
I don't even see it. It was so small, it didn't even hit my tape.
Yeah, the wonderful world of unconsolidated tapes. But for me, you know, folks, you know what I'm going to look for in this stock? I'm going to look for it to go green today. A nice bar yesterday coming off the low of the move. You got to get up to 32.86. Your high was right there. So if they really want to shrug this news off, is you know, no big deal. Let's see it get above 33.33, hold 3.33, and then you got some room to the upside. Coming back on the downside, hard to find good support. The low of the move yesterday was 321.11. And do we have anybody that benefits from this? It doesn't sound like it's a huge drug.
It's not, if it's not moving, the main stock is rarely a sympathy play. Gotcha. So, and you know, obviously, if we had Adam Feuerstein on or somebody, may know how each drug influences the other ones. But I'm not a biotech expert here. I just look at the charts just like you do, Joel. So I'm not sure about that one.
All right, let's rip through these earnings here. We've got 5 minutes.
Let's go.
All right, let's go in chronological order. Gilead Sciences was the first, 4:01 p.m. yesterday. Q4 EPS, $1.78 versus $1.67, beat there. Sales of $5.9 versus $5.73 billion, beat there. Raising the dividend from 52 cents to 57 cents per share, and that's the story on Gilead.
You know what? When I'm looking at all these things and they've got earnings now, look at the previous day's ranges. Look at the previous day's lows, because there is going to be people who, you know, missed the lows yesterday. And obviously, if you're buying off the open, you were really happy that you did that. But, you know, when you have an earnings stock that all of a sudden gives you a second chance at yesterday's low, I think, you know, that low from 76.90 from yesterday, I think the buyers will line up down there. So, you know, if you, I don't know, it's down $1.60. I don't know if you're going to get that low, but you get anywhere in the lower 77s. I believe there's going to be buyers just because you've got people who missed the dip yesterday and they're kicking themselves now. And on pullbacks, on stocks, on earnings reports, I think that they look to buy those dips.
And Dennis, I concur with you on this one. Boy, we're agreeing too much today. 76.90, that was your low in yesterday's session. That matched the low that you had on January 10th at 77.01. So call that a double bottom. If you breach that level, hard to find support all the way down to 74.57. I'm not looking for that. Coming back on the upside, you got a good level on the upside. You're closing your high right at the same place. 80.61 was your high, 80.38 the close.
This does not apply to Chipotle, CMG, I'll just say. Spencer, give us the numbers here for CMG, and yesterday's low does not apply.
All right, Chipotle Q4 EPS $1.55 versus $1.38. Sales of $1.11 versus $1.12 billion. So a slight miss there. Q4 comps up 0.9%. They see comps increasing in the low single digits for the fiscal year. And that's the story on Chipotle.
It's still a mess. This company just can't get away from its messes. Joel, jump in here. What's a pre-market low?
Well, we're just hanging out here at 276.48. That is your pre-market low. There's good news and bad news here. The good news is it's just kind of, well, there's two good news. It's a holding here, right? So someone's trying to bring in some stock here around this area. The other good news is Angie Baby took it home short.
Nice, Angie Baby.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if she's going to be covering or not. The only thing I want to alert Angie Baby to is that...
Gutsy to hold it into the earnings report short. Angie Baby, good call.
She's a good trader. If you don't hold here, and you know, there is a buyer stepping up right now, so you know, maybe if you take a little chunk off here and it keeps going to the downside, keep an eye on 272. Back on November 27th and November 28th, you had a low at 71.65 and 72.23. After that, I mean, if you want to hold out for the actual low of the move, where was that, man? Is this a new low for the move here? 263 even. That's the low of the move. You really, really want to hold out.
Okay, last earnings report before our guests. Go to the House of Mouse, Disney, DIS, trading up in the pre-market here. So we do have one trading higher. You know what, though? All kinds of overhead supply here on Disney. 110, 111, 112. It's just thick as hell up there. I can't, you know, say, you know, you're coming in here buying this thing after this was 104 yesterday or 101.76 yesterday at the lows, and you're going to buy it up here now 110, 112. I don't think the market, I don't think I would be doing that. That's what I'll say.
Spencer,
we forgot Spencer, though.
It's okay.
Come on, Spencer.
I'm right here. We'll do his fast.
Get him on the big screen.
Spencer, you got to be on the screen.
We want to see you on the big screen.
Okay. Everyone in the chat.
Now, I've done my piece. It's your turn now.
Can I read the numbers, and then we can go to – we have a guest in 30 seconds.
If you want to see Spencer, type up in the chat. Okay. We want to know what you think.
They beat on the – fine. I'm going to do this fast. They beat on the EPS. They missed on the sales. They're launching a new ESPN streaming service for $5 a month. So I just did it really fast. There's a lot more, but that's the gist of it. Beat EPS, missed sales, new ESPN streaming service.
Dual thoughts as it rallies into the major overhead supply that we see on this chart.
Pre-market high comes in at 109.37. That was actually an after-hours high, Dennis, so let me stand corrected. That takes out your high. Really, I want to see what happens at 108.63. I mean, that's the first number that you got to chew through, because that was your 2-day high. After that, we talk about all the resistance. You had a trio of highs in the 110 handle from 110.12 to 110.65. Let's do cores next. Can we do cores next?
Nope, because we have a guest. 8:15, okay. And we're going to go to our guest, Michael Szymanski from Glenshaw Capital. He's an expert on VIX and VIX-related products. We'll be right back with Michael. And welcome back, everyone, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. And we're on the line with Michael Szymanski, Glenshaw Capital. He is the founder and senior portfolio manager. Michael, how's it going today?
Doing well. Obviously, the market bounced back, so that's good for everybody. But, it's kind of crazy times out there.
So, Michael, first timer on our show, give us a quick overview of your background.
Well, I started as a floor trader in the SPX back on the SIBO in 96. And since that time, I've worked with a number of different firms. The most recent was Lehman and Barclays Capital after Lehman went down in 2008. Started the volatility business at Lehman Brothers back in 04 and kind of grew the variance swap and VIX business while we were there, such that when the market imploded and Lehman went down, Barclays took us out in 2008, and we launched the VXX on January 30th of 2009. At the time, the volatility market was something like around 500,000 to 1,000,000 vig a day. Vig is a measure of volatility movement, much like delta or cash. And at the time, it was a small subset of the overall risk market. By 2012, when I left to form Glenshaw Capital, it was already trading around a few hundred million big a day on the big bid. I believe on Monday, and I could be wrong, but I believe on Monday it traded as much as 8 billion big a day. Just to give you an idea, like normal equity market, all volatility contracts, all options in general in the U.S. trade around 500 million big a day. So this was 16 times the size of the overall market.
Michael Szymanski at Glenshaw Capital here. I just, you mentioned that you were, at Lehman Brothers. I mean, it's good to have people with a historical, experience in the markets. And, people are getting nervous. Can you draw any parallels? I mean, you went through that financial crisis. There was banks. There was a housing bubble and stuff. Can you just kind of relate what's going on in the market now compared to then? Because, I certainly don't feel like we're in any kind of situation. But speaking for someone who was there that was on the desk, I just want to get your take on that.
The difference is fundamental. I mean, one measure you could call across would be the shot across the bow, as it were, in February of 2007, where we dropped 3% in a day. I think the VIX at that time was again below 10, and it shocked everybody out of their mind. But the difference between then and now is fundamental. There aren't any internal leverage to the U.S. market or to the products like we saw with the collapse of the house market. This would be, in my mind, more akin to the 2010 flash crash. Was it 2010 or 2011? I forget exactly. March of that year, where we dropped very quickly based on quantitative algos going crazy. This would be very similar to that, in my mind. I don't see there being any fundamental leverage issue in the U.S. system other than potentially in the municipal bond place.
All right, Michael, I want to ask you about sort of the growth and the change of volatility products over the last decade or so. Can you explain to us, what you call volatility 1.0 versus, volatility 2.0, which is what you would call the newer products?
Sure. I mean, like when we created the VXX, it was always like designed to be more of a trading vehicle than a buy and hold. It was meant to be a portion of a dynamic allocation strategy, more so than something that people would trade into and just hold for a long term. And in fact, in all the prospectuses and all the speeches that I gave about the product at that time, I highlighted the fact that it was a short-term holding vehicle, something that was designed to be traded around the existing structure. I think a lot of the products that have been created over the last 10 years on the back of it, particularly short vol products, have viewed it as a, you know, as a yield creation vehicle. If you look at the VXX from its inception till now, it's down something like 99.9% or something ridiculous like that. And because the point is that it's, you buy it in order to own insurance. And insurance isn't something that pays out unless there's a crisis. I mean, we all have car insurance, well, health insurance, life insurance, as it may be. Life insurance is a great example. You never collect on that, only your dependents do. And insurance by its very nature is designed to be a premium you pay, whether that's buying puts on the S&P or buying, you know, car insurance on your vehicle. But what's happened is that these volatility, as it were, 1.0 products, structured notes and set it and forget it kind of products, kind of missed the point. Volatility 2.0, as it were, would be using these products as an actively managed portion of a portfolio. And in that sense, there are a number of funds and other things that I'm on the director or advisory board for that use this product as part of their overall trading strategy. And that, I think, is fully approved. If you look at, you know, the major failure on Monday, and like, as much as I don't really want to talk about other people's dirty underwear, the XIV clearly imploded, not because it necessarily is a bad trading vehicle, but because the internal algorithm for it dictated that it needed to be stopped out. I'm not sure that truly answers your question, but I'm trying to like work around it.
No, that did, but I want to build off that. So then how, so aside from so using these as trading vehicles, right? I get that. But at what point have we gone like too far, like down this road where we're looking at, you know, derivatives of volatility, and like at what point is it too much?
Like I've never been a fan of the classic levered or structured ETF, in the sense that they have to do daily resets and they're forced to trade along certain algorithms. So like I think we hit that point already back in 2009 when the levered ETFs and the inverse ETFs started blowing the market up in that spring with their daily forced resets. Since that time, you know, to a large degree, they've settled down and become more mature, I guess is the right word. But otherwise, look, when it comes down to it, innovation is never a bad thing. Innovation is what gets you products and gets you ways to do business that you never got to do before. No one's complaining about innovation in the actual financial space. Everyone's always worried that have we taken it too far?
I just want to jump in here just for a second here too. Dennis Dick here. I just want to ask, you know, the one biggest problem here with a product like the XIV is it's not understood by the general public. You have people who are putting, you know, and investing in this. And this is not an investment vehicle. It's a trading vehicle. But the disclosures that they have, you know, this disclosure that, you know, the thing can blow up if VIX goes up 100% was apparently on like page like 179 of the prospectus. I mean, it's not front and center. People don't understand what they're investing in. And now you have a vehicle that blows up. I mean, how, you know, I think there's a failure in disclosure here.
I'm with you on that. Like, I actually agree on that front that many of the people that were getting into these products didn't know what it was that they were actually trading. And, you know, we can talk about XIV. We can also talk about the fact that the levered inverse financials down when financials were down 80% back in 2008, 2009. You know, you can look at how a lot of these products don't necessarily have proper disclosure, in the sense that, you know, I don't know if you've ever bought cigarettes in London, but there's actually a skull and crossbones on the back, right?
Great
they
point.
Don't smoke these because they will kill you, you know? And to the extent that a lot of these out in the market levered products, you know, some of them should have a skull and crossbones attached to them. Where That's you say, good. You know, these products will kill you if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, day trading
and
vehicles.
That's a big reason. But that's a big reason that that I'm a proponent of more of the managed volatility products and actually still putting your trust in the in an individual or a human or someone that's going to actively manage it and explain to you what's happening to your life or to your portfolio, or you know, buy them and know that they are risky. That's the nature of the product. I mean, if you look at some of the other non-levered or non-daily reset vehicles, like I remember back at Barclays, we actually launched the XXV, which was the other version of the inverse VIX. And it's never achieved the same kind of, say, widespread acceptance as the XIV did. But that's because it didn't use daily resets. And so therefore, it was an unlevered internal product. The problem with your XIV and the other levers is that they're always daily resetting, and so there's always the potential they could blow up on you.
Last one here, and this one's from our chat, and it goes back to just, I think people just trying to understand these products, and I think someone here is trying to understand, and he wants you to explain to him, do you know why the UVXY and the VXX were disconnected yesterday?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, can you explain, one of our traders in the chat, UVXY and VXX, why were they disconnected yesterday?
So the basic problem is, well, with the VXX or with the UVXY?
He said the UVXY and the VXX were disconnected yesterday. I guess not.
Yeah, I mean, again, one of the basic issues you've got here is the fundamental underlying of how the index itself is created. So something like the VXX is a much more stable non-levered product. And as a result, it has a greater depth of market, I guess is a good way to put it. It's a much more mature product. Something like UVXY, by its basic underlying, has a levered aspect to it. And so you're depending on the people to trade the product to recreate the index on daily assets. We saw this back in 2012, I think it was, when one of the products went hard to borrow. And again, I'm not comfortable talking about other people's products or things that I didn't have a direct hand in, but where one of the products went to 300% premium or 200% premium to its NAV. And it was because there wasn't a sufficient borrow capacity to close that product. Think of it this way. I believe we're all familiar with the concept of closed-end mutual funds.
Yes.
Products that trade based on a conceptual NAV, but that aren't directly convertible on a daily basis. And so a closed-end mutual fund could trade 20, 40, even 100% away from its NAV, based on people either over-investing in the vehicle or needing to get out. So either a positive premium or a negative premium. Something like the UVXY, it doesn't have that because it is daily redeemable, like major ETFs are. But it does have a certain basis of risk in terms of whether or not people are going to be able to meet or match their end-of-day premiums. God, that was really very jargon heavy.
It's okay.
UVXY needs to trade every day, right, in order to meet its algorithmic requirements. Something like the XIV also needs to trade every day in order to meet its algorithmic requirements. A non-levered or non-inverse ETF does not. So that's why SPYs or Qs, IWMs and the BXX, they match their algorithmic requirement every single day because they don't require a daily trading capacity.
Got it.
Better answer, maybe?
Yes, that's a good answer. All right, we've been on the line with Michael Schmansky, Glenshaw Capital. He's the founder there and senior portfolio manager, explaining to us the nature of volatility products, how they work. Michael, thanks so much for the insights. We would love to have you back, and have a good one.
Yeah, my pleasure. Take care, John.
All right, 8:32. Do you want to go do some balances real fast, Dennis, before we hop over to our next guest?
No, they're small and mixed. It's the first day we've seen in a while that it's kind of just not influential to the market at all. I'm just jumping out. And Procter Gamble, 41,000 to buy. Hewlett Packard, HPQ, 75,000 to buy. Twitter, 39,000 to buy. Twitter's trading up on Snap, obviously, which we haven't got to yet. Alibaba, 47,000 to sell. That's significant. GE, small buy and balance. Look, even GE had a green day yesterday. You know, everything was rallying. 164,000 shares to buy in General Electric. Also, Ford is 166,000 to buy. They're just mixed. Morgan Stanley, 36,000 to sell. So they're fairly sizable, but they're very mixed. So just probably depending on, you know, some of these are obviously news. And let's go with the Snap report really fast here because it is up 21%. It received 5 upgrades today here with analysts chasing price, obviously. Stock exploding here after hours and in the pre-market. Bringing Twitter along with it, Twitter's trading up 3% just because of these fantastic Snap numbers. They must have said everything good, Spencer. What did they say?
The adjusted EPS was a 13-cent loss versus a 16-cent loss estimate. Sales of $285.693 million versus $253 million. So they beat both those numbers. What else did I see? Daily active users up 18% year over year, up 5% sequentially. Average revenue per user up 46% year over year. Good numbers across the board. RBC, JP Morgan, Bank of America, Susquehanna, all upgrading.
Everybody. It's an upgrade party, Joel. It's an upgrade party. Bring your upgrade, everything. Chase and price.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what to say about this one.
What's the after hours high?
The app, it got over $18, Dennis.
$18, major wall. I think you're going to have sellers come into this. I know you can say, whoa, this is awesome. This is a turning point. They still lost 13 cents. Anyway, whatever.
Real quickly, 1837, that's your pre-market high. Really been in it. That was after hours, in fact. Really has been in a trading range for the most part between 17 and 1750. So it's really between 17 and 1740. So I would use those as early parameters here. If you want to find resistance, even though we're trading above it, you have a double top at actually 3 highs at the 1670 area. Make that 4 highs at the 1675 area. If you really want to get crazy today, the 50% retracement, and looking on a monthly here, from the all-time high at 29.44 down to the all-time low, 11.28. Dennis, you sold 11.28, right? You sold the all-time low on a day trade?
I did. On a day trade.
Yeah.
I sold the all-time low. Nobody else sold lower than me on Snap. I was the worst trader ever in Snap. I sold that 11.28.
Yeah.
I think we even wrote an article with that, Benzinga, didn't we?
I think we may have. All right. I think we may have. Okay.
Nobody did it worse than me.
Let's do cores real quick. Can we do cores real quick?
You want to do cores real fast? Okay. All right. I mean, okay, fine. We'll be late for our guest, but you win. Michael,
I thought you were talking about beer for a second, but
Michael Kors,
I need beer after Michael these last Kors, couple of days.
Yeah, I bet you do. Michael Kors, EPS beat by a lot. Sales beat by a lot. Q4 guidance. I'm sorry. That was Q4. Fiscal year guidance coming in line. That was EPS, or actually a little bit light. Sales guidance coming in line, but they blew away the Q4 numbers.
Wow.
No, somebody got the memo here last night, too. This stock was getting the hell bit out of it last night after hours. So I don't know if people get this early lead sometimes, but this thing was bit up in the 67 handle, up 2 points after hours. Not surprisingly, they come out and blow it away. These after hours traders or these guys that, you know, bit up these stocks after hours just seem to always be in the know. This guy was right again.
I'll just give you your pre-market high. Your pre-market high is 72 even. You backed off. Holding 70 as minor support. going farther out here. If you want to target above $72, if you've been waiting to sell at $73.47 since February of 2015, this may be your opportunity. Spencer, sorry about going over here.
Okay.
You want to take a quick break?
Yeah, our final guest. Our guest, and this is an interesting one. We talked every day there for a few months about blockchain and blockchain stocks. And this guy, Eric Irvin of Reality Shares, created a blockchain ETF. And we're going to ask him all about in a second. We'll be right back with Eric Irvin. Welcome back, everyone, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanin, Dennis Dick, and we are on with this guest who you can see is maybe too well-dressed to be on our show with us, and he is Eric Irvin. He is the president and CEO of Reality Shares. Eric, how's it going this morning?
Great. Thanks for having me, babe. Yep.
So tell us about this next-gen economy ETF is what it's called. The ticker is BLCN. Tell us, I guess, start with the conception. How was it conceived?
Yeah, so I have a real passion for technology and innovation, and about 2 years ago started researching this blockchain and just fell absolutely down the rabbit hole. As far as Bitcoin is, you know, that's really the start, but the technology underneath Bitcoin, really that chassis that was invented to support Bitcoin, is so far reaching, almost as big as the internet. And I wanted to figure out a way that we could invest in it. Anytime there's a new disruption like this, there's gotta be a way to invest, right? So we took a look at every single company, every public company in the universe, in the world, and scored that company based on its blockchain impact. So whether it's gonna be reducing costs due to blockchain, increasing revenues due to blockchain, or just outright disintermediated due to blockchain and actually having a negative score, you know, due to the blockchain impact. And then we scored those companies, built an index on that, and then built an ETF that buys those companies that are using blockchain in their business, and then rebalances that portfolio every 6 months.
Okay, so I was going to ask next, like, what qualifies a company for being included in this fund? I guess I'll ask it a different way then. Is it having like you're not going to include like long blockchain corporation, right? Like, that's not how it works.
No, exactly. In fact, that's the thing we're going to avoid. And there's so many scams out there, just like in the dot-com days of the internet, we had, you know, this massive innovation, right? The internet. But you had companies changing their name to .com and the stock was going up 400% on, you know, penny stock just based on a name. We didn't want that. So what we did was we built out a board of advisors who are all industry experts in the blockchain space. Eric Voorhees was one of the earliest, you know, Bitcoin entrepreneurs. He's built like four or five different companies in the space. He's number 8th most influential person. Jeff Garzik actually worked on the source code of the Bitcoin protocol, so he can understand whether or not, like Kodak, for example, are they actually developing a blockchain or are they just copying somebody else's source code and then slapping it up there and saying, yep, we're a blockchain company. And that's exactly the case in the situation with Kodak. So we look at every single company, we look at the actual code that they're using and they're developing, and are they actually working on blockchain? And then we partnered with NASDAQ. NASDAQ actually started investing in blockchain about 4 years ago. They put about $100 million just in different VC companies in blockchain. They've actually built out a blockchain exchange for private companies. So they're also able to evaluate whether or not the company makes it in or the company gets kicked out just because of fluff.
How is the fund structured?
It's an ETF. And it's based on an index, but as I just, you know, kind of laid out, the index has a human component to it. Every 6 months, these humans are evaluating which companies make it into the index and which companies make it out based on that scoring system. And then only those companies, the top 100 or those companies that make the score of a 50 or higher in that blockchain score, that score, like for now, there's about 58 companies in the index, again, because it's such a new technology that it's not really able to, you know, we don't have 100 public companies in the market that trade right now on blockchain.
I think the mania around this is so interesting to me. I find it fascinating just how obsessed people are. And the SEC made you remove blockchain from the name, correct, of the fund?
Yeah, there's so much confusion right now. Blockchain is not Bitcoin. And that's the thing that, you know, we keep having to hammer home. Think of it like in the gold rush, right? Who made all the money? It was the guys selling the picks and the axes and the shovels. It wasn't the guys that were, you know, digging around in the mountains for gold. This is the same kind of concept. So gold is the commodity, to just stick with that analogy. Gold is the commodity. That's the Bitcoin. That's the cryptocurrency. But the underlying technology, that infrastructure, you know, and all of that supply to that system, that's the asset here that we're investing in. And that's the innovation. So just like the internet was, you know, in the early days and became kind of this massive innovation and disruption, email was the first killer app on the internet, right? That's when the internet really became real to all of us mere mortals. This is the same kind of concept here. Is blockchain is the technology, but Bitcoin was the first killer app on that technology. So these companies are like IBM, Intel, Microsoft. Microsoft has a huge cloud business now out of this blockchain with their Cocoa framework. So there's a lot of companies that are, you know, using it in their business. Even Walmart is seeing, you know, reduced cost. And on a business like Walmart, where margins are razor thin, anything they can do to reduce costs in their system is a massive boon to the earnings, which is everything for those kind of retailers.
Took the next question right out of my mouth. I was going to ask you for some of the top components, but can you give us some more?
Yeah, sure. Those are examples of kind of real businesses, traditional, that we can understand and we can evaluate, and then we just see it as a new revenue source or a new cost savings. Then there's kind of the from left field, where people think, is this a hype name or is it not? So Overstock.com, Overstock, as we all know, the online retailer, you know, kind of a competitor to Amazon. About 5 to 7 years ago, Patrick Byrne really got on a high horse and was fed up with naked shorting of his stock. And he wanted to develop a system, a stock market really, where you can't double short a stock. Goldman Sachs can't lend out your stock to 10 different brokers or 10 different short sellers. And it was just his mission. And so the only solution was blockchain. Because in blockchain, just like with the Bitcoin, no two people can have the same digital asset. So think about that in the case of stock market. If we could have full transparency and we knew everybody who owned every stock, then we would know that nothing's being double shorted or naked shorted. And so he built out this exchange. Well, now he's, you know, the only company that has a regulated exchange that's built on blockchain technology. And with that, it's almost going to be potentially bigger than the Overstock business entirely. They're thinking about selling Overstock as a, you know, online retailer. So that's kind of a good example of something that would be more of a pure play and a lot more, you know, volatile now. It's up well over 100% since they announced a lot of these things. Hive Blockchain Technologies is a real business. They're actually mining for cryptocurrency. But even outside of that, like Intel, for example, you know, they could see as much as 20% revenue bump from their new chip that they're coming out with, which is really, you know, built around blockchain technology, and it's going to be the support infrastructure for blockchain technology.
Last one, Eric, and I'll let you get out of here, but yeah. In the month or so, I don't know, 3 weeks since the fund has been launched and leading up to that, what's been like the biggest misconception that you've had to explain to people about the fund, how it works, or the space it plays in, or just what's the biggest misconception that people have?
Yeah, well, the first of which is that is it a cryptocurrency play, and is it that's hyped up, speculative, you know, kind of overdone, done trade, and that couldn't be farther from the truth. So that's the, you know, kind of the right down the middle. It's pretty straightforward. But the further to that is this concept of hype, right? Is it hyped? Yeah, absolutely, it's hyped. Blockchain is, I mean, you know, the SEC didn't even want us to put it in the name because they were concerned about that. But there's something that goes with that hype. There's a reason that it gets hyped, because it is an innovative, disruptive technology. And what that does is that brings capital flow. So dollars come into the space. And the reason for that is because of you know, in the financial industry, you could see almost $20 billion of cost savings just with blockchain technology alone. So, you know, in a business where everything is all about net interest margin, the more they can save on cost, the better off these businesses are going to be. It is mainstream. It's not just this fringe kind of technology that's sitting out there and people are just speculating it. And that's just, that is happening for sure. But there's way, way more to it than just cryptocurrency.
All right. We've been on the line with our final guest of the day, Eric Irvin. He is the founder, president, and CEO of Reality Shares, the blockchain ETF. Reality Shares, next gen economy ETF, which I've had on the screen now for a minute, BLCN is the ticker there. Eric, thanks so much for the time. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. 8:48 now, 12 minutes thereabouts left in our show for the day, guys. Where would you like to go?
S&Ps are just chopping around here, but you know, let's talk about the overnight action here again, because it's two nights in a row that we've seen the S&Ps absolutely get massacred, only to bounce back. I mean, we were talking, how much were we down, Joel, two nights ago? I saw the S&Ps down almost 100 points, the futures, were they not?
Yeah, we were doing the math on that, and they got down to 25.29, Dennis. That was over 100. That was like 120 point discount.
That's unbelievable.
To the cash, and I was looking at the level. You know, and I got to do some more homework on the circuit breakers. Overnight, it was 5%, and it didn't quite get to 5%. So. And that's a discussion for another time. Maybe we'll have to do a special segment on trading, limit downs and limit ups. But it didn't quite get there. Another thing that I kind of want to point out, too, and this kind of figures into a lot of your trading, talked about it with Brent yesterday, was, you know, the SPOOs were way up, okay, but the cash was down. And that was the only reason, was because you had that wild action after the close. And so, you know, there was a huge discount, but that 25.29 is where we got to. And I just want to bring up a number. You know what I'm all about here, 50% retracements. From your high of 28.78.50 down to that 25.29 low, your 50% retracement is at 27.03.50. What do you know? The high yesterday was 99.75. The high today, 97.5. So 2,700. Let's just go for round numbers. If this market
270 in the SPY. 270 in the SPY.
That's it. It's all about. That's the most important level going forward to clear that, to go to highs. If not, I mean, I don't even want to do a projection. If we, you know, if this 2,700 holds up and we have another 250, that's like a 300 point move. Another 350 on the downside. That would take us to 93.50.
I mean, so difficult to, you know, project and figure out when you've got a previous day. We always like to look, me and Joel, at the previous day is low and the previous day is high. And the only thing that can really come into play, I think the previous day is low, I think we can both say, is probably out, because previous day is low, if you're looking at the SPY, at least it's $258.70. It's basically, you know, 100 S&P handles below where we're trading right now. So you look at the previous day's high and you think, I agree with Joel, it's a big number, 269.70. Do people line up there to lighten up? If we take that out, then you go to the next day before that and you're up to 275. But the ranges are so expanded right now. I mean, we had 2 days in a row where we've had basically 100 points of S&P range. That's incredible. I don't know if I've ever seen that. Two consecutive days where we've had basically 100-point range, Joel. That's got to be unprecedented. When has that happened?
The financial crisis, Dennis.
Did we have a 100-point range? Probably not.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't know if we did, because the S&Ps were trading so much lower then. The S&Ps were 1,200. So on a percentage basis, yes. But on a points basis, I don't know if we did. I don't know if we've had two consecutive days where we've had over a 100-point range on the S&P.
That's a good point. And then also, like you're talking about, the Globex low from yesterday, obviously, you know, I can't say we're not going to see it, but that's why I also like to track the intraday lows. Now, the intraday low, because a lot of people don't trade after hours or pre-market, yeah. The intraday low was made at 25.89 yesterday. Now, that's 90 handles away. I'm not saying that, you know, we're not going to see that today. But that was your intraday low. But what you're going to have here is you had the spike low, you had a nice rally back. Now buyers really got to try and figure out, hey, did I miss the major, you know, the major chance to buy? So you're going to do some backing and filling today. You know, just get comfortable in this handle.
Explain that, Joel. Wait, just for newer listeners, explain backing and filling.
Okay. So you're looking at a daily chart here in the S&Ps, right? And the world's coming to an end yesterday. We go all the way down to 25.29, you know, huge discount to cash. Then that intraday low is a good 60 points above that. Now you hit resistance. So there's all these people that have been waiting for a correction and waiting for a pullback to cover their short to redeploy the longs. Well, now you got to be thinking 150 points off that low. Did I miss a major low? Was that it? Yeah. You know, are we done? So now you can't, you know, it's unrealistic, at least today, that unless there's some super bad news or something, that you're going to be even going to be able to buy at 2,600. You have to redeploy. You have to figure out where to buy. Right now, the buyers are stepping up at 2,660. So if we take out the pre-market low, next level I'm looking at is 2,641. But it's just not going to cut and slice through it like it did before, because people are going to be putting bids in here. Like, you know, I got
so many people hitting themselves that they didn't buy the pullback 2 days ago. That there are going to be a lot of orders down there now. So that's what he means. It just fills up. The book fills up. Yep. And the book will be filling up as you move down. The book will be filling with buy orders, just because there's a lot of people who missed the boat yesterday at the lows, and they're really disappointed that they did, especially money managers.
Yeah, and I can just give you the parallel to, like, when I held the deck on the floor, you know. And what I mean by holding the deck is you're holding a series of orders. On the upside of the deck, you have limit sells and you have buy stops. On the bottom on the bottom side of the deck, you would have limit buys and sell stops. And when you were holding that deck, because as the market moved, you had to give the brokers the order. Well, man, if the market would rally, I mean, that deck would just fill up with sells and buy stops and buy stops and buy stops. And, you know, eventually you would clear out the top of the deck, right? And then it would start to build up again. And then the deck would, after you take out all the stuff on the upside, the deck will build up on the downside with bids and sell stops. And then the market pulls back, and then it starts to even out. And then it goes down and it clears out the bottom of the deck. So talking old-fashioned trading tactics, but there's decks now. They're just hidden and dark pools and mysterious orders. It's
there isn't one deck anymore. There's like 50 decks, really, when you look at it. You know, what is it, 13 public exchanges here now? I can't even keep track. And, you know, like you're talking, 50 dark pools out there, off-exchange market makers. There's just everywhere. Orders are just hidden all over the place.
And just one quick anecdote on that. Like, if you'd be holding the deck and, you know, flipping cards and not pay attention or something, and then there'd be a huge move in the S&Ps, and they would blow through your deck, you know, and you were supposed to have all these orders filled. So I turn to the guy next to me and I'd be like, oh, you know, I need to take a break. Boom, hand him the deck. And then the broker would be like, where are my orders? And I'd be like, my fault here. But what happened to Trunk here?
Sold the LA Times. Finally.
Really? I
mean, not finally. After like 3 years of very, very tumultuous ownership, they are selling the LA Times to a biotech billionaire.
And I'm just trying to look here. This thing really isn't trading here. Is it halted right now? Did it halt here? I believe it's halted.
I saw a couple trades go by, and those halted.
Obviously. So the stock got halted, and obviously it's trading up ahead of that. But it looks like you know, this thing's going to be huge for TRNC. Like, we did have a trade that traded $30. I see a $32 bid in the book right now. But again, we were halted here. So, you know, we're going to have to see where it reopens. But it does look like this is great news for TRNC longs.
Yeah, I don't really understand that, though, real quickly. Because Tronc, their business is news publications. So the LA Times isn't this is like part of their core business, that they're just it's in their core competency, is what I'm saying. And they're selling off something that fits into their core competency. If this is good news, they're selling off their core competency. Holy bejesus. I mean, they're getting not the worst price tag in the world. It's
what are they getting?
It's $500 million for the sale of the LA Times and the San Diego Union Tribune. So half a billion dollars. for that, plus the assumption of $90 million in pension liabilities, which, you know, not bad price tag for those two papers, all things considered. But
they have a market cap of only $600 million. That was the close. So they're basically getting, you know, almost their entire market cap here. So obviously, and then the pension liability assumption is huge as well.
Yeah.
You'd have to really dig into their numbers. I don't know what they're going to have left after this is what you're arguing. Like, if you're selling your core business.
Well, I'm not saying it's the core business. I'm saying
What else is there?
It is in their core competency. And if Washington interprets a company selling off their core competency as good news, then that's not good. What else do they have? They have the Chicago Tribune. They have, let me look right here. Chicago Tribune, Baltimore Sun, Orlando Sentinel. Thank you, Dustin. A bunch of newspapers and some magazines.
Well, I mean, they're getting, you know, if they're getting $500 million, the company's worth $600 million coming into this. It's a pretty big figure, so it's not surprising that's going to get bid up because of that.
Yeah.
Because basically they've got all that other stuff, and they're getting $500 million bucks too, plus a pension liability. So it's basically $590 million, which is their market cap. Which was, you know, at $18.10. So I do believe it is going to get bid up here. Obviously, stock is not open here yet, so we'll let you know when it reopens and where that price is going to be. Just follow Benzinga.
Yeah, not much to say about this. Some odd lot prints. One number only. The former all-time high was 26.90. So I don't know how that's going to come into play. All the calculations that Dennis was just talking about is, beyond my scope of understanding. Just saying, wasn't this like on a trade block or rumor block or takeover block going back and forth? Wasn't this a while ago?
Well, they split.
This has been rumored.
They also split. Back in 2015, they were part of Tribune Media, which is now TRIB, I want to say. Not TRIB. TRCO, right? TRCO and TRNC. And that split 2015. But yeah, they have been on the block too. The whole thing is kind of a mess, but they are selling off one of their largest properties this morning. So.
All right. Dennis, was there any, 1 minute here, Spencer? You want to sneak something else in? We did absolutely no ratings.
That's what I was going to say. There really weren't any ratings that I saw that weren't like obvious. There was a lot of
chasing. There's a lot of chasing. Chipotle downgraded by Mizuho, downgraded by Stiefel. Both chasing price.
The only one that I saw that wasn't a chase was Citigroup downgrading Charles Schwab. To sell.
That's big.
To sell.
To sell too. And SCHW is trading down about 2% in the pre-market, giving back a lot of its gains from yesterday. Remember, we want to look at yesterday's low though, 49.16. That is still another $2 lower than here. I'm not sure it's got the gasket that far down. I think you get anywhere near $50 here though. I think they line up for the stock. So I'd be actually on this pullback. I think that's an opportunity.
And that was, again, the only real rating that I saw that wasn't just an analyst following through on earnings and upgrade or downgrade after that. Just a,
like Snap, we said, had five Snap, upgrades Chipotle, this morning. Five.
Man, I'm not even going to put it on my screen today because I just...
Five upgrades.
I would just automatically want to short it. So I'm
you had a great call yesterday, too. I want to talk about TripAdvisor because I listened to the show yesterday even though I couldn't be on it. And you were talking about that 34 level, Joel. Trip didn't quite get down to the 34 level, but you were talking like it was one of the only stocks. It was only two stocks in the S&P that were green on Monday. And TripAdvisor was one of them. And obviously TRIP trading up significantly yesterday. So great call. You see that little bit of strength showing a little bit of life where it's up on a down day. And that 34, you were saying that just brick wall of support. I've never seen a level, and you pointed out 34. I've never seen one like that that has that many lows in the same area. Well, it got in the 34 handle, and they kept buying. And look at the explosion in the price yesterday. So great call, great alerting our listeners there, Joel, to that huge support on Trip because it exploded out of there.
Yeah, one other one. Even a blind squirrel can find acorn every once in a while. The GM had a nice day, too. Had a good earnings report. You couldn't get it flat on the day. They opened it high. I still think it opened near the low. 40.06, boom. 40 even low, that was up a half and rallied up to 42.23. But, you know, just like on days like this, when you know, you're doing your shopping list. Is that what Kramer used to say? You have your shopping list out of things to buy. Well, there was some good opportunities. I'm sure we'll see more like that. 2 minutes after, Spencer, we're keeping you over. want to wrap things up and preview Thursday's show for our listeners.
Yeah, on tomorrow's show, we're joined by Stan Bokhoff. He's the founder of TradingView. You've seen their charts. I know Nick Shaheen uses them. Joel uses them too sometimes. Great platform for charting. So Stan will be on tomorrow. If you want to catch today's show, though, want to listen to our interviews with Eric Irvin and Michael Schmansky again, you can do so on the podcast, which is on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, or go to youtube.com/BenzingaTV and just rewatch the show as it aired live. Thanks to all you who joined us today in our YouTube chat and premarket.benzinga.com for our chat there. Hope you all have a good rest of your day, and we will see you